I reside in Dunbar, West Virginia. In 1942, I was a soldier in the 18th Engineer Combat Regiment, which went into the Yukon Territory to build the Alcan Highway from White Horse to the Alaskan border. On April the 5th, Easter Sunday, 1942, we boarded a train and rode to Prince Rupert, where we embarked on good tourist boats and took the inside passage to Skagway. It was good to be relieved of KP and have somebody paid to do it. We travel like first class people. We had to stay 2 weeks in empty buildings in the Skagway to wait for the White Pass to clear out. What a thrill it was to stand on the docks where Soapy Smith had been shot, and then to go over the range and see Lake Bennett and follow along the river until we came to the White Horse Rapids, made famous by Robert W. Service and Jack London. As I talk about the pictures, the snapshots that were made during the construction of the highway, I do it from memory of 50 years, and many, of course, I cannot identify. I will not attempt to identify soldiers in the pictures except those who are very close to me. I will attempt to be truthful and correct. As I come to a page in the album, I will speak of the pictures, if I speak of a picture at all, from left to right, beginning at the top left-hand corner, as if you were reading a book. Some of the pictures will need no speaking, no description. Others I know a good bit about. You'll notice many pieces of equipment stuck in the deep mud, and I guess there are two reasons for that. One is a truck or a cat standing up on the dry highway is of little interest, and the other is that somebody had to be out front. The first picture on this page I cannot identify. The second picture is of the D4 and an Athey wagon stuck in the muskeg. It looks like probably after the D8s had begun to grade out the road. And these boys made the mistake of thinking they could go across it. Another thing I should point out is that these pictures of equipment were grouped together as equipment and not as sequential happenings in the building of the road. The picture in the upper right-hand corner that looks like a ladder is the lead for a pile driver. Piling had to be driven every time a bridge was built, and then for many other reasons. And often there was a problem when soldiers tried to drive the piling within a few feet or 2 or 3 feet of the top of the ground. They hit the permafrost, and they tried different methods of getting through the permafrost, even to the place of putting a steam jet down beside the pile. I believe they found that the most effective way to get the piling in was to put a steel point on the pile. Here we have another stuck tractor. You'll see the two or three dog faces here apparently sawing a log. You can see dimly a truck in the background. Now that was the truck that carried the air compressor. Of course, we didn't have gasoline saws up there like they use today, nor electric. So the saws were powered by air, and this air compressor went wherever the work was and supplied the power for those cross-cut saws. However, if we're getting out the timber up in the big woods, the compressor was of no benefit. Here we see a D8 actually cleaning out the timber and leveling out the path of the highway. I have no idea what that man-made crib is right in front of the blade. Then there's another set of leads for the pile driver. This picture in the corner, the fellow on the left is C.O. Humphreys, the speaker. And the fellow on the right is Glenn Miller, long, poor boy, long since dead. Here's a plane landing on Lake Kalani. Naturally, it's on pontoons. And we learned when we're talking about bridges on this highway, I learned from those old regular Army engineers that you didn't say pontoon, you said ponton. But anyway, that's the mail plane. And when that came in, the GIs all headed for the first sergeant's tent. Here you can really see how it was done. See the forest of the spruce trees and the GIs who act as handymen for the guy on the tractor, on the D8, to do whatever needs to be done. And he is just simply pushing those trees over and out of the way. Well, here's a lapse of memory. I cannot in any way identify this river, but I know that we were bivouacked nearby. We heard the plane crash, and practically the whole company rushed down to the river. It was the opinion of my friend Nelson, who has a part in this description after a while, that this plane was coming in to our company to pick up an ill sick soldier to take him back to Whitehorse. The thing I do remember that happened here was that one soldier, whose name I remember but will not use, rushed down and tried to cross that river by swimming, and it was too cold, and he was floundering, and as luck would have it, one of the men had been working with a rope and just had it in his hand when he ran down, and he saw the man in trouble, tossed in the rope. And then the first sergeant put everybody back to work, and I don't know what in the dickens happened about the plane after that. Now there was a shovel that we called a dipper stick, and you can see that it is scooping up sand and gravel to load trucks to put a some kind of more solid surface on the highway. Looks like the 4x6 is giving the little guy a pull. Now that weapon scare is not stuck. It's just in the snow there, and we paused to take a picture of a friendly dog face. This boat was used on Lake Kalani by different people. I never had any chance to be in it, so I really don't know the real use of it. I've heard it said that the resourcefulness or ingenuity of the American GI won the war. Of course, we have to say that our Canadian friends were ingenious also. But you see how they arranged to load gravel on a truck, simply built this thing out of timber that they cut right there on the spot, and left a hole in it at the top, and push gravel up against it on each side to make a ramp, and then those little D4s would push gravel up to the top of that rack and push the gravel through a hole, and it would fall in the bed of the truck. More scenes to show you the way it was. And yes, we had our artillery along too, because those little guys were not too far away, and we didn't love them then. I don't believe I could help things any by talking about the pictures on this page. Now here you see how it really was. That's the track, that's the way it was when our outfit went from White Horse to Kalani to bivouac, way out ahead of the troops. Here you see a structure which shows how the bridges were built by the GIs at that time. This, of course, the timber was cut nearby and shaped and brought in and made the superstructure for a bridge across one end of Lake Kalani, naturally where it was shallow and where it was narrow. The road digressed there. If it had continued straight, it would have gone 8 miles across Kalani Lake toward Burwash Landing, but it had to go around the lake shore and come up to the end of it to get this bridge in. A better picture of the bridge. Another picture of the bridge with a ponton bridge beside it. And more. This is the same picture that I said I couldn't identify earlier, but I now believe that it's one of our soldiers just looking over a campsite of a former passerby. We camped beside the Donjack for a long while. Well, one of our boys is actually walking a shovel across that bridge we've been looking at. The last picture on this page is the old trail past Burwash Landing, I believe, where Jocko had a trading post. I believe the scenes on this page are self-explanatory. These first three pictures show camps someplace, and I'm not sure where. I actually believe that the first two pictures are the Skagway River taken from high on a hill where mountain where one of my friends and I hiked up while we were bivouacked in Skagway. Another ingenious bed built by some pair of GIs, a double bunk made out of poles. As well as I remember, we couldn't get these boys out of bed when we were breaking camp and taking the tents down, so we just took the tent down and left the bed standing, and then they later came back and got your material. We were told, the remains of an old copper camp. The picture in the left corner there, of course, is a fly, which houses the mess at that for that day, and you see the tents in the background. This picture here with the rack also has to do with the preparation of the food, and here you can get a close-up of the two cooks, or KPs, one getting ready to serve the food. The food was prepared in those big pans, and the cooks used to burn baked steak, whatever they cooked in those big aluminum pans, and it was really a chore to get them out clean. So after we left the Yukon and got out in the Aleutian Islands, the company commander was persuaded to issue an order that any cook that burned a pot had to clean it, and made KP much easier. Here's a barracks that was built at the Donjack just before we left to come back out through Whitehorse to go back to the Aleutian Islands via Skagway. A sawmill. These human interest things have more attraction to me than the pictures of equipment, I believe, at this time. This, you see a moose draped across the hood of a Jeep, and that moose cost the guy a nice fine by the Canadian government, and not only that, they took our rifles and kept them, what you call stacking the rifle. Nobody had a gun to carry. I remember that the culprit put a tin cup along on the chow line rack there, and any GI that favored him dropped in a donation toward his fine. But the way they cooked that moose and we tried to eat it, we should have fined him again. And a couple more barracks. I believe this to be the house of a Caucasian gentleman who lived near Lake Kalani. I know that that house was off limits to GIs. There's my buddy Nelson smoothing out one side of a log with a drawer knife. And if you're trying to figure out what looks like a rack of fish or hides or tobacco in the right-hand side of that picture, if you put a magnifying glass on it, you'll find that it's a stand of young trees. Here's one of our finer pieces of work. What you see is a shower room, a laundry room, a holding tank on top of a platform that we built out of the nearby timber. You see barracks bags of clothing there and piles of wood. And you could see a part of a tank on the left. Yes, the boys in the shop built us a good water tank, and of course we heated the water with wood. We could always have a hot shower. An article in National Geographic in November 1943 describing the process on the Alcan Highway, it relates that the author visited our camp for chow and for a hot shower in this shower arrangement. Another thing that happened here was that the company commander agreed that two fellows could take over the chore of doing the laundry, and each GI was to pay $2 a bag for his laundry. And that was great. The thing that happened was that we didn't count on the Don Jack River, because when it began to get cold, and the warm water, I understand, would run out and freeze, and then more water would run out under the ground and freeze, and it kept building up until it built up and built itself into that shower house, and our barracks bags of clothing were on the floor, and the ice froze them in. And of course, if you tried to take them out, the ones at least on the in the ice, the clothing had to be torn up. So if your barracks bag got in there, you had to sign papers and get all your equipment reissued, and it caused quite a controversy. There were some people, I think, that thought we should pay for the clothing, but that didn't work out. The two guys there in the center were in my company. The one on the left could really fry fish. He was a fish fryer. And the one on the right is Nelson, the man whom I have just visited and who has made a tape on his impressions of the dedication ceremony, which you will hear at the end of this taping. Here we have a crew building a barracks, a wooden barracks, to provide shelter in the cold, cold weather. Incidentally, speaking of the shower, which you see another picture of on this page, sometime in October, an order was issued that we would use the shower no more, because everybody, it's obvious that it got too cold to have a shower down there. So, you know what we did. Here we are now to the pictures of White Horse with the native people. And I think that totem pole was possibly a Prince Rupert. The fish rack where the fish are hung up to dry is put there somewhere along the highway by the native people. I think it was Lake Kalani. Cemetery there was at White Horse. I know, because I marveled at the fact that all those graves had a building for them, and I never did get to talk to anybody about it. As well as I remember, I never spoke to any person other than a GI in the 6 months that we were on that highway, though I did hear a native man say that you should never run from a bear, and he showed the scar on his shoulder where a bear had bitten through his pack and frying pan and scarred his shoulder. But that didn't stop me from running from a bear when Peabody and I had hiked up through 12 miles from camp to a lake and built a raft on the longest day of the year when the sun looked like it just disappeared around the end of a mountain and came right back up. Anyway, we built that raft, and then the next weekend we decided to go up there again. And I was walking along behind, smoking my pipe, and Peabody was out front. And I heard something that sounded like an angry male hog. And so I ran, and I ran toward Peabody, and I yelled for him to wait. If I was going to be chewed by bear, I wanted somebody to be chewed along with me. So old Peabody just happened by good luck to be standing in a little clear place. We were up there in the popple or aspen, just about head high at that place. And so he said that just as I made the clearing, the bear made it right behind me, almost reaching me, and then it stopped for some reason. And that bear circled us for some time. I don't know how long, it seemed like a day, but I'm sure it was only a few minutes. It just kept going around us, it would stay in the brush, and every once in a while it would come in and stand up right at the edge of the circle. So we agreed, and honest it's truth, we agreed that if that bear charged while we were standing there, that one of us would run one way and one the other, and one of us could get to camp for help, because we didn't have a thing to fight with but a little knife. That's after they took our rifles away from us. Of course, it's a good thing they took the rifles, because we might have got killed anyway if we had tried to shoot that bear. This is a cairn with our rifles leaned against it that we built on the top of that mountain from which we could see Mount Logan. We put our names and addresses in a tin can and put it down and covered it in those rocks. And I wonder if anybody has ever been there since. This is Kalani Island, that you can see as you travel along the road on Kalani Lake. I, Humphreys, am the man on the horse. This horse is a part of the horses that we took up the line so that the officers and surveyors could ride on out ahead of the companies on horses. I don't know whether they needed them or not, or whether they just wanted for fun, but they took them. And now we have a set of pictures that are mostly personnel, fellows doing what they like to do, entertainment, fishing, and so forth. We worked about like any regular construction company. You worked your 8-hour shift, night or day or whatever. There was not a lot of GI soldiering at all. And it was mostly enjoyable. You see Humphreys himself standing in front of his tent with a string of fish. You see Humphreys and Peabody trying to pull a rod apart. And then you see some guys just showing her off with their rifles. And here's a couple of fellows. I think this picture is misplaced, and it is part of going up to the top of that mountain where we built the cairn, and I believe that Miller turned back. There's Peabody and Nelson in that picture. And Yeah, this page, the important thing there is the band. Those boys furnished us great entertainment. We enjoyed them, and they sang and played Please Don't Sit Under the Apple Tree. You'd wake up many mornings to that song. On page 3, lower right, you see Sergeant Peabody checking his timepiece because the truck that was supposed to pick us up is probably late, which happened frequently. Page 4, top center. The reason I remember this picture is that's where we tried to eat the moose. And I remember the picture because of a remark, which is not repeatable, made by the man in the foreground. Of course, you see a chow line. And then the middle row center is a picture of Sergeant Valentin after we were above the timber line on top of the unnamed mountain. And then the next picture, if you turn the album so that it's upright, you see that that's the cairn that we built. That's where we put our names in a tin can on top of the mountain, and we haven't heard from them. The band worked hard. The last two pictures on that page is the band entertaining us again. The center, in the center row on page 5, you see what looks to be a girl in a hula skirt. That was one of the members of the band who impersonated females as a part of the entertainment. On page 6, you of course see the band in two pictures or three pictures, and there is a couple of real live surveyors. The picture on the right in the center row doesn't belong here, but it's interesting that on the way up to Skagway, some people were allowed to go ashore at Juneau for a few minutes, and this fellow removed his shirt and posed in a snowbank, I assume so he could send it back to his girlfriend. And the lower right is one of my favorite sports, and that's me, number one on the left, with the biggest string of fish. Page 7, lower right, shows a man with a snowshoe hair, and would you believe this fellow's name was Snare, S-C-H-N-A-R-R-E. I wonder how he caught the rabbit, maybe in the snare. The following pictures are in the Aleutian Islands, and I won't comment except to point out that in the center row, bottom, you find me running a drag line. I've by this time moved into heavy equipment, where I enjoyed my work very much. This concludes my experience as a worker on the Alkine Highway and as an airport builder in the Aleutian Islands. An experience I wouldn't have missed. I learned a lot, had some fun and some loneliness. But I'll tell you, you couldn't hire me to do it again.